And good morning. You're tuned into KBBI Homer AM 890. Thanks for listening. We're broadcasting live from the Gary Thomas studio. It's Thursday, and it's time for the COVID brief. I'm Josh Krohn. I'll be standing in for Kathleen Gustafson this morning. And I have on the line with me Peggy Erkinoff from the School District Connected. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning, everybody, and good morning, Josh.
Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning for our program. So I'm a little bit behind the ball this morning. I just got the call at 8 o'clock that I'd be standing in for Kathleen. So, Peggy, we had a story this morning about the student participation with the school district this morning. Laid out a little bit of the details about what's going to start happening on Monday, coming up very soon. Can you go ahead and give us an overview of what's happening?
Well, in the Southern Peninsula, in your area, that's what we call Southern Peninsula, schools will be opening. We are definitely dropped down into a low risk for COVID, which means schools are opening in person, or parents can choose 100% remote learning through their school, or they could choose homeschool. So schools are starting on Monday, and some of our schools are actually starting, I forget what day of the week it is, because we've been working so much today down in the area, too, some of our Rational Believer School. So this is an exciting time, and it's also a crazy time to navigate what it's like to open schools during coronavirus, and we're doing it. And I want to give a huge thank you to all of our staff and all of our parents and students who are just navigating this in a new way. But we've got meals starting up on Monday, and later today I'll have a form going out so people that are doing 100% remote learning can order meals and do once a week pickup, so they'll still get the school meals. And everybody's pulling everything together to be able to start a new school year.
That's fantastic. It's great to hear that the options are available for parents around the peninsula to do both remote and in-person learning based on their choice of what's safest for their family. Tell me a bit about the process of the remote learning. How does that look?
Well, each of the schools has been working in the last month, especially since staff came back, to design what their, I don't want to say virtual classroom, but it is. We know students can't sit in front of a computer all day long and really learn. And so we did learn a lot when we did the emergency remote, it's a mouthful, sorry. The emergency remote learning last spring in March and April when all of the schools closed to students. And so our teachers have continued to learn, and the students will be working with their different teachers, and they'll have their virtual classroom and working with assignments. And I also want to make sure people know, too, that it isn't only all digital or all online. We know many of our families don't have access to the Internet, so we've done all this month with our returning student enrollment and our new students the option to say, what resources do you need? Do you need a Chromebook to check out, just like you check out a book from the library, so that we can load that and your students can have what they need? So we're working with our families to find out what do they need to be able to do their best in 100% remote learning and support that learning experience at home. And then with the option either, again, of it's at home through the neighborhood school or at home and the parent is the primary teacher through homeschooling.
Okay. So with the schools open and some of the parents keeping their children home for the duration, what does it look like for the teachers who are trying to teach their classes both in person and remotely? Do they have time to get all that done?
That's a great question. So last week, the decision was made to change the school start and end times in the actual buildings, but those were adjusted, especially for our elementary teachers. And that was in conjunction with conversations with every single one of our school principals, and we've got 42 schools. But we changed that to allow a little bit more teacher prep time, a little bit time for sanitization. We've got all kinds of protocols in place, more so than ever. Our buildings are really clean, and we're making sure that they stay that way, and the high-touch areas are cleaned often. So there's a little more prep time for our staff, and then just the amount of how a school might design based on how many students are coming back and what's the mix of on-site versus the students who are going to be doing 100% remote. I don't have all the details from all the schools right now. They've been working on that, but they may be adjusting. So maybe there's a teacher that's doing all the remote, and maybe the other teacher is doing the in-person. So the schools are analyzing, and they've been calling every family to find out what they think their options are so that they can plan the staffing and be able to do what they need to do to provide education for our kiddos.
Okay. Now, from the student's perspective on this, if they are in school, you know, we can go ahead and assume that, you know, not all of their classmates are going to be in class with them. Will there be interaction between the in-class and out-of-class students?
I don't know the answer to that right now. I haven't talked to all the teachers and principals to find out exactly how they're designing their classes, so that will be a great thing to learn when we get going. I would imagine that there is going to be some of the teachers that will be teaching simultaneously. I've heard this, there's some teachers, this isn't a requirement, where maybe there's a class in both. It's delivered in class, and it's also being simultaneously broadcast so that a student can be tuning in through their digital classroom, and there could be interaction for sure. Our kids are pretty savvy, and they've learned a lot about how to use online classrooms and Zoom or Google. So those aspects, there's a lot of professional development for our staff that's happened, and those will be great stories to do here in the next month as we just shift the way that we're delivering education. And, you know, there always has been a trend towards, we've had innovative teachers and the solid teachers that are in the classroom, and then how can education shift? And the world is changing even prior to the coronavirus, so we've fast-tracked into having to respond, and we're got that growth mindset, and hopefully everybody can step into that, because this is hard and it's going to be bumpy, and there's some kids that will thrive and some that aren't. So we want to have those people in place at the school so the kiddos and the students and the teens that are doing remote learning know who they can go to, so that every single student has the go-to person at their school that's a safe person for them and that they can talk to and get what they need if things aren't working out the way that their education is being delivered right now during this COVID time.
Okay. So one more question for you, and then we're going to shift gears to talk with Tim Dillon. With the plan for opening and or closing the schools, I have a teacher friend that wanted me to stress this point this morning, that as we have our different codes for the case count on the peninsula, which right now the lower peninsula is green, which means schools will be open. However, as the case count goes up and the codes go from green to yellow to red, she wanted to stress that red does not mean closed, red means remote. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Oh, that's a great question, and I absolutely can. So in a high-risk scenario, the first thing I want to say about the risk levels is we have a new dashboard on the district website at kpbsd.org, and you can actually see a little dial for the Central Peninsula, Southern Peninsula, or Eastern Peninsula of where the percentage is with color, so you can see where anything is. And we don't want to be ping-ponging back and forth, like, and it might happen if there's a positive case in a school that with a teacher or staff, we have a number, like a matrix of protocols that have to happen. So it could be that everybody gets a call and says, just like it's on a snow day, tomorrow will be 100% remote. But usually we can see a trend for those three main sections of the peninsula that we're trending up, unless there's just a huge cluster outbreak. And then we need to watch what's happening. So it might be like we did in the Central Peninsula, the superintendent, in conjunction with input from medical and through our Smart Start plan and all the metrics that are put into place, made a decision to suspend opening schools in person and only go to 100% remote for the first 2 weeks, because we're trending up and we're definitely high into red right now. So instead of just doing it and seeing day by day so that families can plan, businesses can plan, and teachers can plan, he did that for a two-week period based on the high count. But what that means is that when we shift to 100% remote learning because of high risk, the students don't come to school, and there's some exceptions to that. So we identified in the Smart Start plan that about 25 people worked on all summer long, that there's certain populations of students who really do need in-person learning. And because the schools won't be as full with other students, we can physically distance much better and create distance in the classrooms. So there's certain student groups, the Title I pre-K, special education pre-K kindergartner, and some of our special education students would still be able to come to school in a high-risk situation for COVID that would have everybody else shift to 100% remote learning. So the schools will be talking to those students and parents so they know who they are. So that's, there's a little bit of an exception, but the kids, when we go to 100% remote, don't come to school, most of the other kids. The other things that we're putting into place, too, is children will be cohorting. So we're doing kind of a daily contact of knowing where anybody's really been in a building, so that if somebody tests positive and we for COVID-19 and we need to go do contact tracing to figure out who had exposure and was close to that person, and maybe go back several days because there's this onset of symptoms, but people are contagious before that, and then a test result. So we've got lots of things in place to be able to track that well, and it's a big undertaking.
That's great.
It's a long answer to your question.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. That's great information. So a good, solid process in place for keeping track of infections in the peninsula and responding to that, and also a good response plan for what happens if you get a positive case in the buildings. And also for the parents, so that you can watch the school district's website daily to see if any changes happen on there. Are they going to be getting any alerts, text messages, or anything like that?
The best place for parents to get information is from their school. That's their number one person they communicate with. But I'll be doing, as I've been doing, a weekly update from the school district to the whole school, so we know every family and staff gets it. And then the only time there would be a direct alert is if it's a warning that, hey, we're on the rise, just giving you a heads up that, you know, we're watching this closely, or if it goes into a high risk red in the area, then everybody would get at the same alert plus from their school. But I would be sending that out from district office to all the schools that are affected.
Very good. Okay, Peggy Erkinoff, the Director of Communications from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Peggy, do you have anything else you'd like to share before we let you go?
I just want to tell everybody, just thank you. You're doing your part. You're keeping COVID risk low, and I know everybody's tired of this. It's really hard. And just by talking and working together is how we can get through this, and we will. And so please reach out to your schools. Let us know what questions you have. And we're here together to get through this. So I just want to thank everybody and really give a shout out to all of our staff who are navigating, some of them with their own children and their responsibilities and their care for everybody else's children that are in their classes.
Well, thank you so much. Peggy Erkinoff, Director of Communications at the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we're going to shift gears here. We're going to see if we have Tim Dillon from the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. Tim, are you on the line?
Yes, sir.
Wonderful. Well, Tim, it's great to have you on the show this morning. Tell me a little bit about the work that you've been doing down here on the Lower Peninsula for the last week.
Well, thank you for having me. First of all, I wanted to give a shout out to Peggy because Peggy is doing an awesome job. And I tell you, it's folks like herself that are keeping people informed of what's going on, because this is the kind of thing that people can get wound up pretty tight about. And I think with her calm message and being able to get the right information out has just been outstanding. So, Peggy, thank you for everything you're doing for our community. What we've been doing down in the southern part of the peninsula is no different than what we're doing all across the entire Kenai Peninsula. Since the outbreak, we have been heavily involved in trying to make sure that communities and businesses are getting as much as we can get our hands on from the state and federal government to help them with Alaska Cares, to help them with the municipal relief funding, sitting down and talking to businesses, whether it be individual commercial fishermen or somebody who owns a regular store or an online store, but making sure that we're there to assist them when it comes to identifying any funds that are available to help them, opening up the right doors. And I have to tell you, down in Homer, you know, Ken Kastner, the mayor, was on top of this right from the beginning, and we started meeting early on with, okay, what's the best way to handle some of this direct municipal relief money? What's the good, the bad, and the indifferent? How do you handle these things? And I tell you, between him and Brad over at the Chamber, I think Homer has done an excellent job. I have to tell you, I think the entire Kenai Peninsula with Charlie and how he has set up the borough mayor, between our borough and the six incorporated communities, they really are the leaders in the state of what's going on and how to handle some of this thing, especially the direct municipal relief and the small business relief. Is it perfect? No, it's not. But we're moving ahead, and people are actually getting dollars in their bank accounts.
That's good. Yeah, there's lots of opportunities opening up both with the borough and at the city level, all across the peninsula. Tell me a bit about the businesses or organizations you're trying to reach right now. Who needs the help the most?
Well, you know, it's been coming in waves, and the latest group has really been the commercial fishermen, because they were not eligible for anything until, as far as state relief, until this past August 6th. So they are now eligible. So, in fact, I was down there last week, and the chamber set me up in their boardroom, and I had a new appointment every 20 to 30 minutes, and they kept me business. They kept me busy for several days, and in fact, I'm also going to be coming back, looks like sometime the first week in September. But we've been doing that all around the peninsula, and because some of the things we can do in a general fashion, you know, and like yesterday I did a webinar for the chamber over in Seward. But then once you've done all the basic things, you know, some of these businesses and fishermen, they want to talk to you one-on-one because, again, some of the information is personal. It's specific to them, you know, whether somebody has an EIN number or they're doing it from a Social Security number or, you know, what they've done last year versus this year. And, you know, so we're providing those kinds of services, even down to the fact that we have a lot of folks that don't understand technology and really have no clue what to do with a computer. So one of the things that we've been doing is after we get an individual that owns a business, you know, up to speed, get all the information together and all, we have them come to our offices. They make an appointment and they come to our offices and they sit with one of our staff members that are helping put everything into the computer. You know, it's one of those things that if you did it all by paper and tried to mail it in, it's going to take some time for you to be able to do that. But you know, this is we're moving things along and trying to get things done as quickly as possible.
Well, let's come back to the issue helping folks who are fishing a little bit. So people who fish are kind of all over the map on their business arrangements. You know, if you own the boat and you have a business ID, a tax ID, or if you're doing it as a sole proprietorship and running it off of your Social Security number for filing, and also for employees of those people who are operating boats. Some of them are employees of the boats, some of them are subcontractors. Are there opportunities for all of those people to get economic relief?
Yes, but it comes through the boat owner and who's handling the boat owner and the permit holder. And what we've been able to do, for example, is if you are a boat owner with your permit and say you have two crew, the way you're able to get relief on the personnel side is, first of all, you have to have your 2019 taxes done. And what you do is, as far as the boat captain, we can pull the numbers off of your Schedule C. If you are a boat captain and you need to take care of your crew, you normally 1099 them, so you pull the 1099s. So it's one of those things that you have to remember that these programs are not set up to assist with lost revenue. They are there to hopefully make you or put you in a position where you'll be able to continue through another year. It's there to set up relief for some of your expenses. So there are seven different kinds of expenses that have been identified that you can get relief on. And depending on your kind of business, you can go one direction or another. So, for example, there's one of the seven is expenses incurred to replenish inventory or other necessary reopening expenses. Well, some folks have looked at that and said, I don't know what that is. I don't know how to do that. Well, that's not for everybody. That's basically for our restaurants or hospitality industry that on March 11th, when the governor said everything's shut down, I'm sure that there were a variety of restaurants down in Homer, and I've dealt with a lot of them already, that had to throw things out. Different kinds of food that, you know, were perishable. So this allows them to get all that inventory rebuilt and to be able to get assistance with that. So everything is a little different. It's far from being perfect, and I've been working with our congressional delegation on some potential changes if something else is going to happen after September. We do the basics for people, and then we do the individual, you know, assistance one-on-one. And the thing we didn't talk about in the beginning that I want to make sure everybody understands, and this has been a difficult one for folks to understand, is when you look at this, the big picture, we are not government. We are not. Some people think I work for the state, the feds, the borough, the city, whatever. We are a private corporation that assists with economic development on the Kenai Peninsula. We've got board members all over the borough. In fact, Karen Marks and Brian Zach from down in Homer actually sit on my board. So there's been some pushback from some people. In fact, it's funny, yesterday I got a phone call from somebody that was telling me about my mother's ancestry and was very, very upset with me. And I had to wait till he finally took a breath to stop him and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, you're pointing your ammo at the wrong guy. You know, I'm not the problem here. I agree with what you're saying. Now let's figure out what your problem is and how can we help you with it. So I just wanted to get that out there because there have been several people from Homer that have felt that, I was part of government, and I've had to try and straighten that out with them.
So the Economic Development District, that's a corporation that's chartered by the borough, is that correct?
No.
No.
We are not part of the borough.
Chartered by the borough.
Oh, okay, yes. We actually handle all of the things under Title 29 for the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So we've got a contract with them for $100,000 a year, which is a lot less than what they used to pay, you know, when they had a staff putting things together. But we handle, you know, the situation and prospects and all the different federal things that need to be handled for them. No different than, you know, we have a contract with the Denali Commission. We have a contract with Economic Development Administration. We've got a contract with the state. All of our stuff that we do is based on contracts. But the good part is the average Joe that walks in our door or calls us doesn't pay a dime for any of our services.
Wonderful. Let's jump back really quick here. So we were talking about the seven areas that you've identified for areas for economic relief. When we talked about the first one, which was restocking inventory.
Yes, sir.
What other areas are you looking to help with?
So, as I said, there's seven different areas. So you've got the interesting part is, even though I mentioned the payroll costs are based on last year, everything else is basically based on this year, beginning on March 11th. So you work from March 11th until when you're going to apply, which hopefully is here in the next week or two, and then you go out 8 weeks. So you wind up being able to cover things up through till October. So you not only have your payment, your payroll costs, but you also have eligible expenses, things that, for example, that you put on your credit card that are short-term debt that are tied back that you can say is because of COVID and you didn't have the revenue stream, you had to put it on your credit card. Those things can be, you know, rent of your facility, mortgage, any of the different areas. You know, one of the things I've told some of the fishermen is go on over to the gear shed, ask them to pull from March 11th until now all the things that you've purchased on account. And for the most part, we'll be able to help you get all of those things reimbursed, whether it was, you know, some hoses for your hydraulic system or any of those kinds of things. You also are able to get your utility payments done. And that, people need to remember, utilities is not just electric. It's electric, it's gas, it's fuel, it's your cell phone, it's your website, all those other areas. And that really could be a big nut for a lot of people. You have to remember that they're only going to give you between $5,000 and $100,000, but you can get there pretty quick, especially when you start looking at your utility payments. The next one is any purchase of personal protective equipment. Some people might say, well, what is that? Well, you go into a variety of the stores now, and they now have that plastic shield. Well, you had to pay for those. They didn't come for free. You had to have them installed. Your staff is now wearing masks and gloves. Maybe even you're providing masks when people come in the door. So those all can be tied back in there. And then any other business-related equipment that you needed because of COVID. Perfect example is a construction company that we assisted. They have four staff members, but they only have one chop saw and, you know, one of a specific kind of a drill and different kinds of equipment. What we've been able to do, because you don't want people sharing equipment, is being able to help them buy additional pieces of equipment so that maybe, you know, John and Bob are only using this equipment and Tom and Susie are only using this equipment, you know. So it really helps an awful lot. But any of those kinds of things, and that's where we say, you know, if people have questions, you have to be able to pass the red face test. And you have to be able to tie it back to COVID. And for the most part, I can tell you, 98 to 99% of the people, they get it. They understand it. They're not trying to game a system. They're sitting there saying, you know what, all I want to do is make sure I can keep my doors open to make sure I make it to next year. The average amount of money that people are getting are somewhere in the low 40s, $40,000 to $41,000, $42,000. Again, if people have questions or need help, we help them with the application. And then some people decide, you know, when they get theirs back that there were certain things that were rejected. You can appeal up to three times. So we tell people, call us if you've been rejected on a, you know, a big purchase that you really think or a big number that you think should be accepted, and we'll walk through them and see if there's a way for us to be able to help appeal for them.
Very good. So it seems like, you know, for the folks who fish, that, you know, since the resource is still there, if they can get their gear together and get their crew together, they still have an opportunity to generate income this year. What about the organization?
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah,
remember what you just said, though. And remember what I said in the beginning. It doesn't matter what income you're generating this year. This is not based on lost revenue. So that doesn't matter. And I don't mean to sound callous, but that's the way the government's got this thing set up. It's based on expenses. It's not based on revenue. And that's been the hardest thing to get across to people, that, you know, people will call me and say, I had a really crummy year because my doors had to be – that doesn't matter. You know, unfortunately, yeah, personally, that bothers me that it was set up this way, but I didn't set the thing up this way, so we got to concentrate on the expenses and not the revenue.
So this
I didn't mean to interrupt. I just needed to fix that.
Focused on base expenses, the expenses that you incur in the pursuit of business as opposed to the income that you would generate with that business.
Correct.
Okay. Are there any other businesses on the peninsula that are struggling that need extra attention or anything like that?
Well, A lot of our smaller businesses have been suffering right from the beginning. Our hospitality industry, our restaurants, there's a lot of them. Very few businesses have come out of this unscathed. And then you have certain kinds of businesses like the medical field, where people were just shut down, like dentists or chiropractors or, GPs, and because it's not taxable, all of a sudden, you don't have that to be able to help them with when you're applying for municipal relief, whether it be through the borough or through the city. So everybody's been touched with this one way or the other. And your local governments. One of the things that we're working on right now is I met with Dan Sullivan here a week and a half ago down in Ketchikan. He's working on a bill to try and loosen the reins on some of the monies going to the cities and the borough, because right now you can't backfill with those monies that you got from the federal government. The concern is if at some point you're going to have to be able to backfill the missing taxes and things, because if not, the only way to fix that is by jacking up the mill rates. And nobody needs that or wants that. So it's the balancing act and working a lot with, this morning I heard from two different legislators that were working on different things. Yesterday I heard from Sarah Vance's staff, trying to help with somebody. So it's a moving target, unfortunately. And as most people will tell you that have been involved with any of this, is that you just pray that you can get 3 days in a row with the same rulings and the same interpretations, because a lot of things have changed over the last several months.
Yeah. Okay, so to cover the lack of sales tax, which, has definitely been an issue for the city and will become a bigger issue here down the road, since we haven't had as a robust of a tourist season as we would have expected, so the city isn't generating all the revenue for operating the city, are we going to see some kind of a crunch? And what is the timetable for looking at relief for that?
Well, currently you have our friends down in D.C. that are on break, and I don't think you're going to see anything coming out of there until September or October. The Senate and House are both on vacation right now. But there's negotiations and discussions currently going on, and we're hoping that they come to some kind of an agreement in early September. But, again, politics has played an issue or a role in all of this.
Yep. I'm speaking to Tim Dillon, who is the executive director of the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. I can read my own handwriting here. Tim, thanks so much for being on the program. Do you have anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
Yes, I do. There's been a variety of folks that we've talked to that are ineligible for Alaska CARES because they applied for either PPP or EIDL and got more than $5,000. My comment to you today is get started on filling out Alaska CARE stuff now, because that is going to change, and we're hoping that that'll change within the next 2 weeks. I'm currently working with the governor's office and the commissioner's office to get that changed. After the preliminary election here a couple of days ago, or the primary election a couple of days ago, it's kind of focused things in a little bit more on this, and I believe that all the gloves are going to be taken off here in the next couple of weeks, and it doesn't matter if you got PPP or EIDL, you will be eligible for Alaska CARES. So a lot of the folks that weren't eligible, if you've got questions, if you need help, our number is 283-3335. I'd be more than happy to help them, but don't be sitting on the sidelines with this, because this COVID is not going away anytime quick. And once October and November rolls around, I think people are really going to start to feel it even more than they do right now. One of the things that Peggy had mentioned about taking care of yourself and taking care of each other, a lot of us that are dealing with this stuff, understand that probably the mental health part of this whole thing is going to hit sometime in late fall, and that's probably going to be worse than the actual virus, because all of a sudden people are looking at their bank statements, their profit and loss, their business they've worked on and, you know, for 40, 50, 60 years, and all of a sudden they're trying to figure out, okay, we realize now that there's no tourists coming. The people don't have the money to be spending. You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to do things? So please take care of yourself and take care of each other. And again, our number is 283-3335. If we can help you through the Alaska Cares process, please give us a call. And if I don't answer, please leave me a message, and I promise I will get back to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Tim. That's Tim Dillon from the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Tim, and thanks for sharing all that information about resources soon to come.
You are welcome. Have a great day. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye. And you've been listening to the COVID Brief here on KBVI, Homer, AM 890. Thanks so much for listening.